You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the rideshare driver's hub at LAX. Planes are flying up above. Dozens of Uber and Lyft drivers are taking smoke breaks, grabbing a bite to eat, and waiting for their next rider. For many of them, finding that next ride has been tough during the pandemic, you can imagine. But right now, another issue is preoccupying drivers for Uber, Lyft, and other apps such as Postmates and DoorDash, and that's Proposition 22. The ballot initiative could reshape the whole industry. Here's how it looks to Alejandro Leyva Sanchez, who's killing some time in the back of his SUV here at LAX.
Personally, it's something that I love about driving for Uber. I'm my own boss, like this guy say, I can drive whenever I want, so I love that stuff. If I want, I want to go home with my family. If not, I just continue driving. If I need money, I just need to drive a little bit more. That's why we love freedom. This is freedom with Uber.
Freedom is the ability to make $1,200, $1,300, even $1,000 a week after taxes, of course, and to only be able to have to work 40 hours. But for a driver to make $1,200, $1,300 a week, if they can pull that off, a lot of times drivers have to drive 60 hours a week, 70 hours a week. That's not flexibility. That's not freedom.
That was former Uber driver James Hicks, an organizer with Rideshare Drivers United. Freedom, pay, and working conditions of some 200,000 drivers is at stake with Prop 22. And you'll decide what happens to those drivers. These gig worker-reliant companies like Uber and Lyft and DoorDash, they've already spent more than $186 million to influence your vote, the most ever spent on a California ballot proposition. KCRW's Danielle Chiraguayo went out and talked with drivers about where they stand on the issue.
Now, before we get into the meat and potatoes of what exactly Prop 22 is, we need a bit of a history lesson. That's because Prop 22 is trying to undo another law. I know, but bear with me. Last year, the California legislature passed Assembly Bill 5, or AB 5. It effectively reclassified many independent contractors as employees of the companies that paid them. And so, instead of getting paid per ride, drivers for Lyft, Uber, DoorDash, and Instacart would be entitled to pay and benefits state laws say you have to give employees. AB 5 author Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez intended to prevent the exploitation of these gig workers. Here she is in 2019.
Story after story of Uber and Lyft drivers living out of their car, homeless, are barely hanging on. And meanwhile, these companies just went public and their CEOs are literally billionaires. They're making, you know, $45 million a year. The companies themselves are billion-dollar companies, and they're refusing to share that with their workers. And that's just wrong.
The law went into effect in January, but the rideshare apps haven't complied. They don't want to. And the thing about Prop 22 is, they wouldn't have to. The ballot initiative would essentially allow for business as usual, meaning that drivers for Uber, Lyft, and others could keep working as independent contractors. They'd be exempt from AB 5 rules. Chris Tilley is a professor and department chair of urban planning at UCLA. He says that this model, where Uber, Lyft, and others rely on independent contractors, keeps their business sustainable.
Their main cost is paying drivers. So it's been a competitive strategy to draw in the drivers, but there's nothing in Uber and Lyft's business model that says they have to keep that rate high because they're saying they can always offer them a particular price, take it or leave it. It's different from having an employee where there are laws like the minimum wage law and the various benefits that you have to offer employees by law where they don't have a choice. The law requires that.
But what do drivers have to say? The folks at Prop 22 will actually impact on a day-to-day basis. Back at the LAX Rideshare Drivers Hub, here's Alejandro Leyva Sanchez, who we heard from earlier.
So as I was driving, I've been driving for Uber for the last 9 months because I have a brand new baby, so I need extra cash. That's why I decided to drive for Uber. So when my wife, she needs me, I just stop driving and that's it. I just go home. If I have a bus, I wouldn't be able to be in my house at the time that I want. If I'm hungry, I just pull over and then I find something to eat. If I'm tired, I just go home. I love driving for Uber. We love flexibility.
Like Leyva Sanchez, Gustavo Lopez drives full-time, and he agrees about the flexibility. He used to work the usual 9-to-5 job and yearned for more.
I don't like be employer to somewhere else. So that people, they make my life. So they make decisions with what days I'm going to work. They make decision for me how much money I'm going to make a day. They make decision if I can have vacation or not with my family. I don't like it. That's f***ed up.
Both Lopez and Leyva Sanchez support Prop 22 because they're afraid they'll have to answer to a boss if it fails. Nearby in the LAX lot, Juan Miranda describes driving for Uber and Lyft as a source of salvation. Miranda spent 13 years sorting merchandise at a warehouse until they cut his hours. So he turned to driving. Now he does it full time, and he's also afraid of losing flexibility if he were an Uber or Lyft employee. He says freedom is the most important part of the job. With the cost of living in California, putting limits on a worker makes it harder to support a family. He's even willing to upend his life and move to another state to continue driving if Prop 22 doesn't pass. Miranda adds he thinks California's government should be providing more opportunities for employment instead of creating problems for folks with families. Drivers who support Prop 22 are afraid that if workers were classified as employees, hundreds of thousands of jobs could be lost, and customers would be faced with higher prices and longer wait times. The companies have threatened to shut down service completely in California if they have to follow AB 5, leaving both drivers and riders stranded. But what about Prop 22's opponents? Before the pandemic, James Hicks drove full-time for Uber and Lyft for more than 5 years. Now he signed up to be an Amazon delivery driver instead. And although he's not actively driving today, he's still working with Rideshare Drivers United, a group of about 19,000 rideshare drivers across California. He says that Prop 22 would actually harm not only workers' rights, but also right where it hurts them most, their wallets.
We want to make sure that you get overtime. You know, we want to make sure that drivers who are driving 50 hours a week, that they get told, you know, compensated, you know. These are things that were fought for with the fair employment. We fought for these things a long time ago, for a 40-hour work week, for 2 days off, you know, for no child labor, you know. We're having the same fight, you know, except this time we're dealing with a tech giant.
Prop 22 supporters say gig companies will pay their workers 120% of minimum wage for the time that they're engaged or actively driving passengers around. Opponents of Prop 22, like Rideshare Drivers United, say if it passes, drivers might not even earn California's $13 an hour minimum wage. They cite research from UC Berkeley, which says drivers would only make about $5.64 an hour under Prop 22. That's after accounting for hidden costs such as vehicle upkeep and the waiting time between rides. I ask Hicks if he's better off working for Amazon.
That's kind of a loaded question. You know, it's almost like, you know, who would you rather be exploited by? To me, it's kind of like pick your poison. You know, who would you rather have, you know, treat you like you're less than, like your work doesn't matter?
Right now, Prop 22 looks like it could go either way. A September UC Berkeley poll of likely voters found 39% in favor and 36% opposed. For KCRW, I'm Danielle Chiriguayo.
Well, now to another piece of the pie, the other drivers duking it out at LAX to get rides. For the past several years, taxi drivers have faced hard times. The emergence of rideshare services such as Uber and Lyft really hurt business, obviously. Then the airport designated a separate, and a lot of folks would say confusing, zone for pickups away from the terminals. Remember LA exit? And then, of course, came the pandemic, making it even more challenging to make ends meet as a cab driver. Leon Slomovic is president of the Taxi Workers Association of Los Angeles, which represents about 3,000 licensed cab drivers here in LA. Leon, welcome to you.
Glad to be here.
We just heard from some Uber and Lyft drivers about their feelings on Prop 22. What about the Taxi Workers Association? Where do you guys stand?
We totally stand behind ride-hail drivers and their right to decent working condition and a livable wage. I think it's a righteous fight, and they deserve to be treated with all the due respect, we totally support their fight for employment status.
So in other words, you're against the passage of Prop 22. If it doesn't pass, Leon, what does that mean for cab drivers?
Aside from the fact that it's the right thing to do, it would, or it might, to some degree, bring us closer to having a more even field, in the sense that there would be a more equitable and sort of way to compare the prices and to have the transportation network companies charge a fair price for their services.
Hey, Leon, how has ridership been for cab drivers since the pandemic hit? I mean, everyone's been hurting, right? And you guys have been hurting, obviously, since the, you know, the advent of ride-hailing apps. You guys have really, you know, taken it on, haven't you?
Yeah, we have taken it on from all sides, from the regulatory side and from the competition. Just to give you an idea, LAX reports that taxi drivers made about 125,000 pickups before relocation to LAX IT lot. With the pandemic, that number dropped to 5,000.
Wow.
Around June, and has risen to about 20,000 in August. At the peak, taxis were picking up close to 250,000 passengers, or making 250,000 trips a month. So at that point, a lot of the drivers dropped out and stopped driving. At some point, it was probably 10 or 15% of the drivers on the road out of 2,363 licensed taxi cabs. It's picked up to about 30% now. So the fact that so many drivers have dropped out of the workforce has enabled those that still remain to try and eke out a living, even with those, you know, meager numbers.
Can you make a living driving a cab now? Is it even possible?
Very, very difficult. The ridership has picked up. The companies have been working diligently on finding new sources of income for the drivers. The city has waived their fees, which amount to about $1,200 a year until August, but have refused to extend it, which becomes very difficult. The fees that LADOT is charging, even for cabs whose licenses have been returned to DOT at this point, so that's one of the issues. But making a living under those conditions, the companies have reduced their staffing levels to basically skeleton crews of just a few people, that the minimum they would need in order to be able to maintain. Two companies have gone out of business, or at least stopped operating. So it's been devastating to the industry and to the drivers.
If you had the city's ear right now, what would you tell them as far as, you know, the type of assistance or support that you guys need? You mentioned extending the waiver of the fees. What else?
We've been urging LAX and LAVA for months to reinstate the taxi stands to the terminal curb. The argument that they had prior was the congestion, which doesn't exist at this point. The other argument they had was that we take too much curb space, which at this point, even at the time when they were using that argument, wasn't true, because they were only considering one quarter of the available curb space at LAX. That would certainly help with the demand and bring more drivers back online. LAX has traditionally, and especially in the last few years, have been the one vestige which allowed the drivers to survive and make a living. And moving taxis to the LAX lot and having the taxis compete with an industry which subsidizes their trips by 59%, it's just not a realistic scenario where anyone would be able to succeed.
How have you been doing, Leon? How have you been driving in the pandemic months?
No, I haven't. I'm approaching retirement age and have some health issues. So I think the risk is higher of contacting COVID than the reward of driving a cab at this point. So I've stayed out of it. Fortunately for me, I can survive without driving a cab, but that's not true for many drivers, and it discourages others from entering this industry.
You think that's going to continue? Do you think the taxi industry is, given the disruptive economy of ride-hailing apps, do you think taxis can survive in this environment?
Well, it's a complex issue. Unless the regulatory framework that the taxis and transportation network companies are brought closer together, it's a difficult proposition when you have companies that can afford losing upwards of $25 billion in the last 5 years to subsidize their operations and misclassifying their drivers, skimping on disabled transportation and endangering their passengers while we maintain the standards that we have. So unless there's a higher standard for service and safety and for treating their drivers as better and paying them a livable wage, it's difficult. I mean, the way the rate is set for taxi cabs is based on cost and is tied to consumer price index. The prices that Uber and Lyft charge are essentially arbitrary. They're based on their best strategy to capture the market without regards for their drivers or for other factors like passenger safety and other laws that they have essentially ignored for years.
Leon Slomovic, president of the Taxi Workers Association of Los Angeles. Leon, thanks for your time. Another perspective. Thank you for giving it to us.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for giving me a chance.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. I stopped counting how many birthday parties had to be canceled this year because of the fast-spreading coronavirus. And you can count what's become an LA institution as one of them. The very first Ciclovia happened a decade ago when you could bike or walk or stroll or roll on empty streets and boulevards for a day from East LA through downtown and out to Boyle Heights. Organizers had hoped to celebrate its 10th birthday this past weekend. But again, large gatherings are still a big no-no. And one person who's particularly bummed that there was yet another canceled Ciclovia is Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed. And between you and me, she was the winner of the Spirit of Ciclovia Award last year. Hey, Alyssa.
Hi, Steve. Yeah, the Oscars of open streets, right?
I love that. I think that's great. And congratulations, by the way, in case
Thank
I didn't
you.
Do that
Thank
last
you.
Year. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Where was the route supposed to go this past weekend?
Yeah, so remember, if you can think back, the first Ciclovia was 10-10-10. What an auspicious date, right? So exactly 10 years ago from this past weekend. And the original route went from East Hollywood, kind of down through by MacArthur Park, along 7th Street, and then up Main and over in downtown and over into Boyle Heights. And so the 10th anniversary route that was planned for this 10/11/2020, because they do them on Sundays, would have traveled a modified version of that known as the Heart of LA route. It's one that they repeat almost every year, a similar one that does that kind of like wonderful parade down through downtown and then kind of splits off either end, one side to Boyle Heights and one side to MacArthur Park. So they had six events planned for 2020, and they did end up pulling the first one in February in South LA, which went up and down Central Avenue. But then, like you said, the pandemic hit and the rest were canceled.
And I know over the years before the pandemic hit, you participated in a bunch of these ciclovias with your family, right?
Yeah, the story I love to tell is that my daughter wakes up just on random mornings, and now my son too, but my daughter who's almost six, and will just be like, can we go to Ciclovia today? And I used to just think, oh, she just really likes Ciclovia. But I think in her mind, she thinks that it's going on every day, and because we always go to different parts of the city and we always are seeing different people. And so in her mind, it's just always happening somewhere. And I think that's a really powerful thought and a powerful statement and a way we should be thinking about it, because my kids have never known in LA without Ciclovia. And some of our most important milestones of the family have happened along these routes. Like, I walked with the kids when I was pregnant with them, and then they tried out their tricycles and strollers and scooters, and they were on the back of our bike, then they moved to their own bike. And I think really seeing how they can move using their own power on these LA city streets and in a way that I'm not terrified to see them doing it, really makes me think that that's how it should be every day. That's the world we should be pushing for together.
And remember, you can still bike, right? I mean, it's not like anyone's stopping you from getting on your bike and riding on the streets of LA. It's just you can't do it in a large group of people in an organized fashion like Ciclovia, right?
Yeah, and I think, too, what makes people feel very comfortable with Ciclovia is that the streets are closed, and it shows how many people do have bikes and do have rollerblades or do have scooters and really want to get out there and use them. But then, you know, on Monday, when they are going back to work, they're going to go back in their car because they don't feel safe sharing the road with those cars.
Right. And yeah, you mentioned, I mean, people rollerblading, dancing, whatever, through dozens, hundreds of miles of LA County streets. Do you think Ciclovia is having any lasting effects across the region? Is it training people to do something other than drive?
I think that's a good way to think about it. I mean, it really is a good way to test how you might feel comfort-wise getting around outside of a vehicle. You could take the subway maybe to get to the route. You could try taking your stroller on the bus. I remember that was a very early one for me, early Ciclovia, trying to be like, how do I get the stroller on the bus, which is not easy. But I think another thing to just think about is Ciclovia is the largest open streets festival in the country. And it was early on just because of the sheer numbers of people who are coming out to these events. So not only like the numbers of people through the years who have experienced it, I think they said 1.8 million people have attended and over 200 miles of streets have been closed. But just alone, like every time we have one of these events, it immediately becomes one of the biggest ones in the country. And now there's even like one set up by other cities. So you have like Santa Monica has their own Golden Streets, and you could go to one like, you know, every weekend in LA County. And I think the biggest impact has really been this regional coalition, these people who have brought together these groups, everyone from AARP to Metro to the LA Phil. Every single time they do a new route in one of these neighborhoods, and they do really try to move it around to different neighborhoods and make sure that everyone is included, they have to go to these businesses and say, hey, is it okay if we take away the parking spaces in front of your business for the day, and we allow people who have bikes and other forms of transportation to pull up? And they all say yes, and they make it work every time. And I think that is a truly remarkable achievement in the Los Angeles region.
You know, looking forward, Alyssa, do you think this COVID-19, the coronavirus, has resulted in maybe some positive changes in the way folks get around? I mean, changes that might survive past this pandemic?
I mean, we do have our Slow Streets program that we've talked about before, where, you know, they're opening up kind of clusters of streets and making them safer for walking and biking. I will say it's not the same as having a Ciclovia type closure. I don't feel much safer using them with my daughter on her bike right now. But I would like to see, you know, maybe some more focus on creating those networks, something like what we have with Ciclovia, where you can actually get from one part of the city to the other because you have a safe route the entire way, and that makes people feel more comfortable. But one thing I keep thinking back on during this time, and I thought about it a lot actually in relationship to Ciclovia, was remember that time early on in the pandemic when the air quality was better than it had been in decades? I mean, we had the cleanest air in the world for a few days. And Ciclovia actually did a study with UCLA in 2015 that measured air quality and how much it improved during one of the events. And the drop was so immediate, you know, particulate matter, which is the worst kind that you're like inhaling and is really doing damage to your lungs. The drop was so immediate and so sustained, but also it was throughout the neighborhood. So I think we've, you know, now our air quality has gotten back to, you know, levels that are once again not good. And it's clear that we need to do more than just reduce our driving, but it does show how quickly just making a few small changes to our city can really make a big impact. And that if we work together to make sure that those changes are made, we can have a better city.
Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed and winner of the Spirit of Ciclovia Award last year. Alyssa, as always, thank you. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
You just heard Alyssa talk about impact, and you know, we here at KCRW work hard to make an impact and help create community in this wonderful, diverse region called Greater LA with information and music and stories about your friends and neighbors, or maybe even people you don't know. And that, of course, is the whole idea behind this program, a show that exists to connect you to the people and places of Southern California, to make this giant place a little more, comprehensible, and to bring people together, because there is power in numbers when we all join our virtual hands and support one another. And that's particularly important right now during this pandemic that's affecting many people so much, including this radio station. So we would love it if you would join hands with us right now and be a part of this community, because you make this station and the work we do possible. It sounds a little hokey, right? But you're there for us every day with your ears. Now be there for us every day with your wallet. It's really true. If you've never been a member before, it's a great time to do it. If you're already a member, you can maybe knock that up a notch or two. We have a $25,000 challenge grant today. Support KCRW by midnight tonight to have your gift matched dollar for dollar by KCRW board members Sharon Delajani and Sarah Delajani. The website is kcrw.com/give. Become a monthly member, whatever you can afford. And if you can't, don't worry about it. But we do encourage you to do so, because you use the radio station, help support it. KCRW.com/give. That's all the time we have for this evening. Tomorrow, we talk with Kevin DeLeon, the former state senator. Well, he's getting sworn in to LA City Council this week, and the local physics professor who just won a Nobel Prize. Chock full of stuff for tomorrow. Hope you'll join us. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Mario Diaz, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen tonight. I'm Steve Chitakis. Have yourself a great night.